Thanks for checking out Podcasts on the Gin. The latest episode of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn starts now.
4:03. Welcome in to the southwest side of Cedar Rapids. You're listening to the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn on all four of our KGYM frequencies. 107.5 FM, the Gym OT, 106.3 FM, 102.3 FM, and of course 1600 AM, the historic main gym. Todd, a little bit under the weather for you on today, so it'll be myself and Rob Howe today and tomorrow on the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. Great show for you today. Howard Balzer, the longtime football observer, NFL observer, now dipping his toe into the XFL, stationed in St. Louis, is going to be joining us at 5 o'clock. We'll have plenty of Big Ten discussion throughout the day, and we want to hear from you. 319-366-1600. That's the First Federal Credit Union text line, as well as the phone line. We'll bring Rob Howe of HawkeyeNation.com, who you hear every Friday during the big hour, which we will have tomorrow as scheduled. And we'll be joined by Anthony Clements, the former Iowa basketball player, former Iowa point guard, who is playing his professional basketball in France. Rob, it's a...
I'm texting with him now. We're trying to figure out this phone thing.
Logistically, yeah. we'll get him on. We'll make it happen. We'll tinker with some things behind the scenes, but we will try to get him on tomorrow because I think one of the more underappreciated players in the Fran McCaffrey era, maybe the most underappreciated.
Yeah, and he was a member of, I think, Fran's best defensive team.
Yep.
And that wasn't coincidental.
No.
He was a very good defensive player on the perimeter.
He's a very big part of that. But my goodness, are you running on fumes this time of year?
I know that, yeah.
A lot's going on. We're about to get into the next week in the Big Ten tournament and a huge game possibly in Champaign. I mean, definitely in Champaign on Sunday, but could have huge ramifications for both teams heading into the Big Ten tournament. And we thought that the Big Ten regular season was going to be crazy. It's lived up to all the entire billing.
Yeah, the first place teams have 6 losses. That's crazy. And I know it's a 20-game schedule, which is a little bit different. But, yeah, just a log jam. And I think I'm more excited for this Big Ten tournament, Alex, and I'll be leaving and going down there next week, than I have before, just because the home court has been such a big factor.
Right.
And now that goes out the window. Now everybody's on a neutral court. Let's see who the best team is.
Isn't it weird? Because we don't have any idea.
And yeah.
It's hard to even look because the first place team has 6 losses.
Yeah.
And has gotten blown out several times.
The one thing I will say is it looks like Michigan State's figured it out. Oh, surprise. It's March. And Izzo's team has figured it out.
Not surprised, really, but what about Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
And you don't hear any Greg Gard,
no,
Coach of the Year talk at all, and I don't get that, other than the fact that a month ago people thought he might get fired.
Yes.
So you think about that pendulum, how much it swung. It's amazing.
Is Greg Gard the Kirk Ferentz of the Big Ten that every time you think that he's down, he finds a way to burst out? Because if you remember when he first took over at Wisconsin, it was in the middle of a bad season.
And it was controversial.
A bad season. It was controversial that Bo Ryan quit in the middle of the year to hand the reins over to Greg Gard because he knew Barry Alvarez was not going to give him a shot if he didn't.
Yeah, he forced his hand.
And he took him to the Sweet 16. And this team was lost. And then you have the Kobe King incident. And that was a bad look.
And that was at the same time where Davison was hitting Connor McCaffrey in the nether regions.
Davison, you had the Davison antics. You had one of the best rookies in the NBA and Tyler Hero from the state of Wisconsin calling that system out.
Yep.
You had allegations of some things going on behind the scenes where the former strength coach said the N-word in front of Kobe King. And you wondered, is this Wisconsin team going to quit on their coach? 7 straight wins.
And a really good chance for another top 4 finish. I don't know what the run is. I know it last year. It felt that they haven't been in the top 4, but that streak was a long, and they've kind of gotten themselves back to that level again. And I think he's got to be coach of the year if they win, especially if they win it. But even if they're in second place, look at that roster. I mean, it's – I watched them play, and Northwestern is bad, man.
Oh, they're terrible.
And they went to Nebraska and won. What was Nebraska, 8-for-30 from the foul line or something?
8-for-30.
Yeah. In the game against Northwestern, Nebraska was like 8-for-30 from the foul line.
See, I heard a lot of people saying they watched that. And I'm like, okay, well,
why did
you watch that? 319-366-1600. But so Mike Hall of the Big Ten Network has said that three of the four double buys have been locked up. Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Maryland is what he says. Is that, and Illinois can clinch a double buy with a win over Ohio State this evening. If they lose, it will be Iowa, Illinois for that fourth spot. But then I'm wondering, okay, well, what about Penn State? I wonder if he did. They ran all the tiebreakers already, because then you'd look at Ohio State also at 11-8. So I'm wondering if the tiebreakers were run there, and that's what he came up with. Wisconsin and Michigan State both at Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Maryland all at 13-6. So those teams have locked up a double bye. And then Illinois, as long as they don't end on a two-game losing streak, would theoretically be that fourth team.
Right, because what's Illinois now? They have
12-6.
Okay. So, yeah, they're in terms of the loss column, they're two games ahead of Iowa. But
correct.
Should they lose tonight to Ohio State, which I'm sure they're the underdog.
Five-and-a-half-point underdogs.
And then if Iowa were to beat them, Iowa would have the tiebreaker with the season sweep. So
correct. So that's the situation. There are a lot of Ohio State fans here in the state of Iowa tonight. And I said this during the gym class. If you missed anything, our podcast will be available at kgymradio.com. I think that if we would have told folks at the beginning of the season that on the last day of the regular season, Iowa would have a chance to win a game to get a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, everybody would have taken it. So we are Ohio State taking care of business in Columbus tonight, away from that being the case.
And it's interesting how, you know, all seasons aren't created equal. And the loss the other night to Purdue brought out the angst again. And there's always a faction of the fan base that overreacts to things. But to your point, if you would have told people before the season, listen, Iowa's going to finish, this is if Iowa loses at Illinois Sunday, which they'll be the underdog, most likely.
Yes.
20-11, 11-9 in the Big Ten. If you would have told people that back in October, would you take that?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It's an NCAA tournament team.
Now it's, you know, gave that one up against Purdue, and people. I hear people harping on the Nebraska loss. The Nebraska loss was a bad, bad loss.
Yeah, it was.
It happens.
What has been the reaction? Because I couldn't get a very good gauge on the reaction of what happened Tuesday night. And we'll get into why it happened. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. 319-366-1600. I think people just sort of wrote that one in the win column. And then when you lose that game, you start to have those thoughts again of you feel that this team is different. You feel that they had turned a corner, but then whether it's a bad matchup, whatever the case is, they lay an egg in the first half against Purdue, and you're kind of reassessing what's possible the rest of the season. Now they can still get a top four seed. It's not going to be easy. They're going to have to go on the road to Illinois, and they're going to need some help in order to get that. But I couldn't get a gauge one way or another on the pulse of the fan base after that loss.
I think the rational people keep it in perspective and say, you know, it happens. And, you know, if you look at this season on a whole, Iowa's played, what, 30 games, and they've had four clunkers, I think you would say, for the Nebraska game we talked about, the two Purdue games, and DePaul. Those are the four clunkers where you say, yes, they just were not good on those nights, and right, they got beat. And that's kind of the, I would say, the landscape of college basketball this year. There's a lot of parity, and if you're having an off night, you're going to get beat.
It's tough right now for me with the Big Ten teams. You proposed this question a couple of weeks ago. How will they fare in the NCAA tournament? Because they've been beating up on each other all winter long. And the depth is still unbelievable. The fact that Indiana and Purdue are still kind of in that position to possibly do some work to get into the NCAA tournament tells you everything that you need to know. Even Minnesota is a tough out on certain nights, although they've blown a lot of late leads at home, which has put them on the outside looking
in. I think they're top 40 net, Minnesota, which is insane.
So Iowa last year, I thought the way that they finished the regular season and then went into the Big Ten tournament, got blown out by Michigan, people sort of wrote them off going into the NCAA tournament. And to me, last year sort of proved that all they needed was to get out of the Big Ten and face some teams that weren't used to seeing them, and they looked a lot better. And Jordan Bohannon was in that boat. Joe Wieskamp was in that boat. We were kind of having the same discussion about guard play last year that we are this year, that clearly the Big Ten is defending Joe Wieskamp a little bit different, and they found some things that have worked. They've gotten up in his space. They've crowded him a lot more, and it's having an effect on him.
Yeah, and I also wonder how once you get to the NCAA tournament, how is the game going to be officiated? You've watched these games. I mean, you watch just the Penn State and the Purdue game, which has been in the last calendar week. Those games were physical. Really physical. And is that allowed once you get to the NCAA tournament? I don't think so. I think the Big Ten is officiated much more lenient. They allow a much more, they're supposed to, I think, look out for to allow freedom of movement. There's no freedom of movement. Ask Joe Wieskamp how much freedom of movement there is.
Well, there's none. And I know that a lot of people have pointed out the way that Luka Garza has been officiated this season. To me, you watch the course of the game and you're like, my God, he just got mugged. There's no call. And is that a Big Ten thing?
I think it is.
Or is that a Luka Garza thing? He draws so much contact, he plays through so much contact that the official, there's no way he's going to blow the whistle every single time somebody fouls him.
But, I mean, you look at, I don't know, was that last week or the week before where Mark Turgeon was crying about Caleb Wesson, called him a bully?
Yes.
And then Holtman had to react to it in his press conference?
And then last year, Holtman complained about how much Caleb Wesson was getting mugged and not... It's a vicious cycle right now.
And the big guys, it's just a really good year in the Big Ten for big guys, from Aturo to Wesson to, Luka, obviously.
Coburn,
Watkins from Penn State. They're just some really...
Tillman.
Yeah, big guys that are really good defensive players and really big, and they just bang on each other. I don't know if I get too down on the officiating and the officials, because how many, you're going to call them all and just have those guys foul out and just not have any big guys? It's a tough spot.
Remember the North Carolina Gonzaga National Championship game a couple of years ago where they called all of them?
Yeah.
There were like 75 fouls and the game took 4 hours and everybody was complaining about how the officiating called too many fouls. That's the spot they're in right now.
And the Iowa game at Michigan State was really physical.
Yes, it was.
What did Fran call that? I think he called it after the Penn State game. He was asked about the physical nature of the Penn State game, and he said, "Wow, we were in combat again in East Lansing the other." He kind of slipped it in there, so it wasn't made a big deal of, but he did make a mention of how physical it was in East Lansing, and to me, that's more. I think maybe where you'll see a little bit more difference in the postseason is on the perimeter, where they're not letting as much grabbing and
right.
clutching and not letting, you know, there's been a lot of that in the Big Ten this season, and I think that may have been, maybe should have been called a little bit tighter.
319-366-1600, that's the First Federal Credit Union text line. 0696 asks a very interesting question. Do you think that any other conferences have the bigs to compete with the Big Ten? You look around college basketball, the Big Ten has the best bigs, the most number of them. I'm not going to...
I didn't even mention Jalen Smith.
You haven't mentioned a guy who could be a first-round draft pick. That's the thing. We try to name off all these guys, and you forget some of them. I thought last year, the point that I was trying to get at is Iowa and Luka Garza. Luka Garza caught Cincinnati off guard and caught Tennessee off guard.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't used to facing a guy like him. And with that skill set, bothered him. Do you remember the Caleb Wesson against Iowa State matchup?
Yep.
He destroyed the Cyclones. He single-handedly led Ohio State into that second round because I thought, you know what? Cincinnati has athletic bigs. Iowa State had some athletic bigs. They should be all right. And he bullied them. And Luka Garza, with all the moves that he had, the Cincinnati wasn't used to seeing that type of skill set from a big. And that's why you look at Luka Garza now, if it was difficult to game plan for him then when you don't have a heavy scouting report on him, how difficult is it going to be to game plan for him now?
Yeah, and I think we saw the other night, Purdue's done a good job, and Painter is as good as they're. I mean, when in the second half of that game, when Trevion Williams and Harms both had three fouls, he started to go to the offensive defensive substitutions with those two guys, and just you watch him manage a game, and he's just really good. And I also really appreciate his honesty after the game. Like, you ask coaches like tactical questions, and a lot of times they will kind of give you just vanilla answers. But he came out the other night and basically said, listen, we were going to double Garza and take him away. We were going to make sure Wieskamp wasn't going to beat us. We were going to pay attention to Frederick. And then, you know,
take your chances.
Yeah, if anybody else wants to shoot, go ahead. And I thought Connor took some quick shots that he normally doesn't take, which surprised me. Bakari Evelyn had a couple really wide open looks. I mean, like, you're in shoot around type looks.
Did you see what Purdue's defenders did when Bakari Evelyn was standing on the perimeter with the ball?
Yeah.
They started walking towards the basket. They turned their back and started going towards the basket, not even trying to put a hand in his face and say, go ahead and shoot it. And that's what they did with Connor McCaffrey, too. And Connor McCaffrey, you could tell early on, was a little bit tentative.
Yeah. Well, he was so wide open.
Right.
Your instinct is, God, this is disrespectful. I'm going to shoot this thing. And the one he clanked off the backboard, and the other one he shot an air ball. And then I think his confidence was shot for the night. I think what you're seeing, and we're getting the Iowa breakdown here, go figure, but
that's it's okay.
Luka Garza's in the post, and the defense is shading to him anyway. Then you run Frederick and Wieskamp off the line and force them into the lane where there's extra defenders already there guarding Garza. It clogs everything up. I'm wondering if you don't pull Garza away a little bit at times and open up that lane, because Wieskamp and Frederick are both good going to the basket. And Frederick with the pull-up, Wieskamp getting all the way to getting all the way to the rim. I think Iowa may need to make some adjustments from what they're seeing defensively.
And you wonder, Luka Garza, I thought during the course of when the offense was operating at its highest level, was knocking down a lot of jump shots.
Yes.
And forcing the hand of the opposing team. He's been a little bit colder
mm-hmm.
as of late. Can he get back to the point where... Honestly, I thought during stretches of this season, when you needed a big bucket, it didn't matter where he was on the floor. You wanted him taking the shot. He could have been out on the wing from beyond the arc. He could have been on the elbow, that little reverse pivot jumper that he has. You just felt in a big situation, he was going to shoot and he was going to make the shot. And I thought that that put more stress on defenses than really anything. But do we just chalk it up to Purdue being a bad matchup? Or the other night, was Fran seemingly legitimately upset with the lethargic start to that game? Because I thought they played better in the second half.
I think there, and I asked Fran about this after the game, I think there's a couple layers to this thing, Alex. I do think Purdue is a tough matchup in that they have a 7'3" guy who's a really good shot blocker and defender, and then they also have Travion Williams, and then they also have a fifth-year senior in Evan Boudreau, who's been through the wars and looks like he's 15. But also, I mean, when you have those three guys on your front line, that's a tough matchup for Iowa. But I also, both of these games, it looked like Purdue was the more energized team.
Right.
They had the extra step. They got the loose balls. They got to the offensive glass, especially early in the game. And Iowa looked like it was stuck in mud. So I don't know what to make of that.
See, I thought they looked stuck in mud on both ends of the court in the first half. That first half defensively, just breakdown after breakdown, allowing wide open three. It looked sort of eerily similar to the way that game started in West Lafayette. Now, they came out of the locker room energized. Lord knows what was said in the locker room at the half, but they responded to it. And when you dig yourself that big of a hole, it's hard to come back from, no matter how well you play in the second half.
Yeah, and you can't give up 21 offensive rebounds. And then 25 to 10 in points off turnovers. I mean, that is, and Garza said after the game, he said, we knew coming into this game, we had to be better on the backboards than we were the first time we played Purdue, and we couldn't turn the ball over. And they did both of those things. And I think teams, and give Painter credit again, and Michigan State did the same thing. Iowa had zero fast break points against Michigan State at Michigan State. They couldn't run the other night. You take Iowa's transition game away, which also takes Wieskamp away, because that's an area where he's good, whether it be getting all the way to the basket or spotting up in transition for a three where he's more open. Iowa's got a counter now. It's kind of like that, you know, pitcher batter thing when you know how to get a guy out, or if a batter is knows what's coming and without a trash can.
Can we bring a trash can courtside?
But I think Iowa and I think the coaches need to maybe counter a little bit what teams are doing to them defensively.
And especially to Joe Wieskamp.
Yes.
And that's
and some of that's on Joe. And yeah, I'll get to that in the love it or leave it.
That's sort of the big thing right now. Yeah. Because the role players the other night, Bakari Evelyn had some like four or five really good games in a row, struggled a little bit the other night. Connor McCaffrey, same way.
Toussaint's just up and down. Yeah, you just can't count on him right now.
Especially not at this time of the year where you just don't want the turnovers. You can't have empty possessions with him dribbling it off his foot.
Unforced stuff.
Exactly. You can't have that this time of year. But anything that you get from those guys is sort of icing on the cake. Offensively, I should say. And any points that you get from them is icing on the cake. Let's make no mistake about this. This team is still reliant heavily on Luka Garza, obviously, but Joe Wieskamp and CJ Frederick. And that's not going to change. It's only going to be amplified when they get to the NCAA tournament and when they get the Big Ten tournament. So CJ Frederick the other night, a little bit off. I think that you can still see the confidence. You still see him coming off screens and firing it when he gets an open shot. At this point, the Joe Wieskamp slump is a slump. And it's because of clear loss of confidence. They got to get him going, and there's no two ways about that.
Yeah, and you just don't know. That's the unknown. You don't know when he's going to snap out of that. What it's going to take. Does he get a couple easy baskets? He hit some free throws the other night, but that didn't really get him going. You know, something's got to spark him where he gets it and he gets into that rhythm. And it's interesting. He's played really well against Illinois.
Yeah, he has.
He's got a history. That was the game last year at Carver Hawkeye Arena where Brad Underwood came in after Iowa won and said, yeah, I was watching Wieskamp warm up before the game just to get an idea of what type of player he was. And he said, I got sick to my stomach watching him making shot after shot. Wieskamp went out and was 8-for-8 from the floor against the Illini. Then he had a big game in the NCAA or the Big Ten tournament against him. And then he had another big game this year. So who knows? Maybe he goes down to Champaign and breaks out of this thing.
319-366-1600. And Rob, you mentioned it earlier. Very astute point. Love It or Leave It is now a Thursday staple. I know it's your favorite segment.
Hot takes.
Hot takes for an entire half hour segment. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, we need to give you your first big board update of the day. Luca Garza, as expected, was named a semifinalist for the Naismith Trophy today. He is one of the 10 players on the list that will eventually name the most outstanding player in college basketball. Garza is a front runner for the award. As many of you know, he's averaging nearly 24 points and nearly 10 rebounds per game for the Hawkeyes this season, and also set the program's single season record for points the other night. The Iowa women will play in the nightcap of tomorrow night's quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis, and they will play either Minnesota or Ohio State. 11th-seeded Minnesota defeated 14th-seeded Penn State yesterday to advance to the matchup with the Buckeyes, who are the 6th seed in the tournament. That matchup will take place at around 8 p.m. Central Time tonight. You and I will also be doing a little bit of TV watching to find out who they will play in the quarterfinals of the MVC tournament tomorrow in St. Louis. That game will be at noon tomorrow, and it will be against either Drake or Illinois State. They're playing tonight at the Enterprise Center in the 8-9 game, and that will get underway at 6 p.m. Central Time. As we've mentioned, Scott Unash has been out all week attending to the girls' state basketball tournament. We have a game that's going to get underway in just about 15-20 minutes. It's a 4A semifinal between Centerpoint Urbana and North Scott. And a final from earlier today, Johnston defeated Iowa City High 71-61 in the 5A semifinal matchup. So the Little Hawks finished their season, a fantastic season, with just two losses on the year. What we'll do right now, we'll take a break, we'll come back, we'll put our heads together, and I'll get Rob Howe's Love It or Leave It, and it's now a Thursday staple. Love It or Leave It, on the way next.
Hey guys, it's time to get ready for outside living again at Vernon Village True Value.
Yeah, Jim, they're the only area distributor for the new Weber 24-inch wood pellet smoker, so you can smoke, grill, or sear right in the backyard. Just $999.
Right, Hal. And Scott's four-step lawn program is just $64.99 with rebate and covers 5,000 square feet.
Hey, want their ad delivered to your phone?
Yeah!
Just text Vernon Village, all one word, to 71441.
Vernon Village True Value, 3501 Mount Vernon Road, Southeast, Cedar Rapids.
In life, we come to expect certain things. Light bulbs light and tigers roar. But what if we came to expect something more? At Honda, that's just what we do. And it's led us to the Honda Accord LX. With more standard torque and passenger volume than a Toyota Camry. Hurry in to your local Honda dealer and test drive the Honda Accord today to see what expecting more gets you.
Hurry into your local Central Midwest Honda dealer or go to centralmidwesthondadealers.com for more details.
Based on comparably equipped models.
When you create some of the world's best windows and doors, you won't let just anyone sell them. You want window and door experts. That's why Marvin Windows and Doors are only sold at local, trusted, independent dealers, not big box stores. Marvin never compromises on quality, offering unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and expert craftsmanship.
At Alexander Lumber, they're proud to be a Marvin dealer. Visit Alexander Lumber, 4340 420th Street, or Answers by Alexander, 1534 South Gilbert Street, both in Iowa City.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, HelpWanted.com salutes the employee of the month. The one employee you can't live without. The others, let's just call them Dave.
What are you doing, Dave? We need help with payroll.
I'm doing squats, Mr. Employee of the Month. I'm taking your advice. I'm working my butt off.
That's not what I meant.
Glutes of steel. Feel them. Right here.
Oh, Dave, now I have to call HR.
We believe local businesses should be packed with more local employees of the month and fewer Daves. We make it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, HelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work.
No matter what kind of entertainment you're in the mood for, sports talk or smart rock, you are covered with KGYM and Smart FM. A walk-off home run at the plate, or walk of life from dire straits. a long run from scrimmage, or the long run from the Eagles. Tune in anytime to satisfy your craving for infotainment. KGYM, 1600 AM, 106.3 in Iowa City, and now on 102.3 in Cedar Rapids. And Smart FM, 95.1 in Cedar Rapids and 98.5 Iowa City.
Tune in to KGYM Fridays during the gym class for the announcement of our Athlete of the Week. Proudly brought to you by Sheet Metal Workers Local 263 of Eastern and Central Iowa.
Welcome back, 4:33. The Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn continues on our KGYM frequencies. 102.3 FM, 106.3 FM, as well as 107.5 The Gym OT. There's some great new programming featured on there if you want to learn more about it. If you don't know already, visit our website at kgymradio.com. I also forgot to mention 1600 AM, the historic main gym. Todd Brommelkamp under the weather today. Alex Kuhn and Rob Howe, as well as our producer Buttons, will be with you for the rest of the show today and then the Friday program as well. What used to be on Friday was Love It or Leave It, but Rob, with everything going on Friday, it's a pretty busy day. Not a lot of room for it, so we moved it to Thursday. So without further ado, here we go.
If you don't love it, leave it. Let the song that I'm singing be a warning.
Two choices, one answer.
We either love it or we leave it.
It's okay. Ricky gave us permission to do this.
So we want to make sure moving forward that we have the okay to call that segment Love It or Leave It. Since you're sort of the owner.
Yeah, I'm okay. Fine with that.
If you don't love it, leave it.
Number one.
Champagne.
And pain. Emphasis on the pain. Iowa and Illinois on Sunday night. Yeah, I think it's going to be for the number four seed in the Big Ten tournament, a double bye, and a rematch of a really physical game earlier this season. We talk about all the physical games that we've seen so far this season. That was certainly one of them in Iowa City. It ended with a little bit of a jawing match between an Illinois assistant and Fran McCaffrey. I don't think that's going to carry over based on what the stakes are going to be on Sunday night. You look for Iowa to make this competitive. I think that they will. I think that there's a lot on the line, and I look at this team and think that they thrive in those situations. And I think Illinois is in the same spot. Io DeSumo has been their closer this year. They're not afraid of big situations. Illinois is going to be at home. It's going to be very difficult for Iowa to go into Champaign and win, but I think they're going to be up for the challenge. This is going to be one of the games of the year, games of the regular season in the Big Ten. So it's going to be a bloodbath, as I mentioned, and in a very, very entertaining game on Sunday night. So I love this.
Number two.
All right, Rob, we're going to, I hate to bring this up. Please make it stop. I think I know what you're referring to here.
I would love for somebody to make it stop. As Alex knows, and some of you that follow me on various forms of the computer and internet, I'm a Knicks fan, a Mets fan, and a Jets fan. Mm. And the ownership of those three teams is not real good. And I didn't think I'd ever see this, but it appears that the Knicks maybe one of the worst franchises in professional sports, and that's saying something.
They have to be, right?
Yeah. And a lot of that can be attributed to owner James Dolan, who I don't know why he doesn't do this to the Rangers, who I don't like as an Islanders fan, but they don't seem to have the drama that this guy has swirling around him seemingly several times every season. And the latest with Spike Lee, who is as supportive as anybody has been with the Knicks through when they were terrible. He's still there on the road, at home.
He's a part of their brand.
Yeah. And, the dust up this week with telling him he can't go through the media entrance anymore is just petty. It really is. Even if, you told him prior to this game that he shouldn't go through that entrance, let the guy go through the entrance. I don't understand why you're, why you're choosing that hill to fight on. It just let it go, and now Spike Lee goes on, you know, national TV shows to rip the Knicks. You just bring on Leon Rose to try to get this thing going in the right direction, and now you're going to try to ask free agents to come to this circus. He can't get out of his own way, and please make it stop.
Number three.
Still not a Michigan State believer.
I leave this. Every year, Michigan State seems to peak at the right time, and I thought that this year may be different. I thought that the injury to Josh Langford that kept him out all season, the adversity that they faced early in the season with the passing of Cassius Winston's brother, all of the turmoil that went on throughout the year, the ups and the downs, that maybe this Michigan State team just wasn't that good. And you know what? A couple weeks ago, when they're playing Iowa in East Lansing first half, I didn't believe anything different. They looked lost. Their offense wasn't any good. They were clearly not following the scouting report of Tom Izzo defensively. And Iowa, without C.J. Frederick, I think had an 8-point halftime lead or 7-point halftime lead. And then at the half, they come out and sideline reporter brings up the fact that Tom Izzo in the locker room told Cassius Winston, "We need you." He only scored 1 point in that first half against Iowa. And since then, they come back to beat Iowa in that game by 8. Cassius Winston scores 19 points in the second half. They go on the road and dismantle Maryland by 22 points. And then they go on the road and they beat Penn State by 8 points. So whatever Tom Izzo, whenever he really needs his team to show up, they seem to show up. Whenever he really needs his star players to play like star players, guess what happens? They start playing like star players, and that's exactly what it looks like is happening right now. They have one more game in the regular season, the Sunday contest against Ohio State. They could be the number one overall seed in the Big Ten tournament. As of right now, it looks like they could be, they will be, and they are, yeah, because they only played, no, they would have split the regular season series, I'm sorry, with Maryland. They lost to them at home, but they have a chance to be the number one seed going into the tournament and the most dangerous team in the Big Ten. And just a couple weeks ago, I was wondering, where's Sparty? When are they going to show up? Well, they're here. They have arrived.
Number four.
All right, no ordinary Joe.
Yes, we touched on this a bit ago in the last segment, and I will love that Joe Wieskamp is not an ordinary Joe, and he's a kid that's kind of hit a rough patch here, but not a reason to panic. He's getting a lot more attention than he was last year, and if you remember, he had some rough patches last year, but it just wasn't as magnified because he wasn't relied upon as heavily. And in talking to Joe last week, I asked him, are you feeling pressure? Do you feel like you're putting too much on yourself? And he admitted that he was. And that, you know, when you start to press like that and you get in your own head, it's tough sometimes to break out of that. But this is a kid still averaging over 14 points a game in arguably the best conference in the country. That's pretty good. He had 7 rebounds the other night. He affects games in a lot of different ways than just scoring the ball. That said, they need him to shoot more, and he is not a type A personality. He's not an alpha dog, and it's a little bit harder for him to, you know, get, and Fran said this the other night, sometimes Joe defers because he doesn't want to let his teammates down by taking a bad shot. Joe, by all means, take some bad shots. And I don't even think they're bad shots if you've got a double team on you or you've got to fight through a double team and force the ball up at the basket. This is no disrespect to the role players that Alex and I talked about in the last segment, but I would rather have Joe Wieskamp taking a forced shot than maybe some of these other guys taking an open shot, because I think he's that good. He's not an ordinary Joe.
Number five.
ESPN is doing what? I'm glad you're doing this one. I thought I saw this story today.
They're doing what? They did what? The reports today are that ESPN is looking for a brand new Monday Night Football booth, because, you know, you hear people all the time, well, I want to be a Division I football coach because they make a lot of money. And then, oh, that was so 2 weeks ago. I want to be a broadcaster, and I want to be a former football player who is a broadcaster. ESPN is trying to bring in Al Michaels to announce Monday Night Football, and they want to pair him with, well, they didn't get Tony Romo. CBS got him for $17 million a year. They want to pair him with Peyton Manning. And I love this. I love the fact that there is now an arms race between these programs, or excuse me, these outlets, to try to bring in the next Tony Romo. Like, you look in the NFL all the time where Sean McVay has an outstanding season and leads his team to the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden everybody wants to bring in that young offensive minded head coach. They want to bring in the Matt Nagys. They want to bring in the Matt LaFleurs because of what Sean McVay did. Well, you see the star that Tony Romo is becoming in the broadcast booth, and ESPN couldn't get him. They tried to get him, but CBS kept him for $17 million a year to announce 17 football games a season.
Probably does some playoff. No
and,
preseason.
And some playoffs.
Yeah.
So just under $1 million bucks a game.
It's good money if you can get it.
Good money if you can get it. Well, look for Peyton Manning to be joining the booth. And I ask this in all seriousness. Are we going to start seeing some star players maybe retire a little earlier and say, you know what, I could probably make more money and spare my brain by going up into the broadcast booth where I don't get hit and don't have to practice all week and still make more money than I do down here? I'm just asking that question because the money that that CBS set the market at for these top-level former players with Tony Romo is going to be interesting to monitor over the next few years.
Number six.
All right, Rob, on the clock.
I just realized I probably love all five of mine, but
it's fine.
I digress.
It's not Valentine's Day, but hey.
But I love this in the sense that I've gotten to cover is the right word, but shoot photos at quite a few high school basketball games this year as kind of a side gig. And I've watched some of the playoff games. And last night I was down in Muscatine for Clear Creek Urmana and Davenport Assumption. It was a great game. They were going back and forth, lead changes, ties. One team would make a run. The other team would make a run and come back and get into the game. And then with about 6 minutes left, Alex, Clear Creek Urmana decided, we got a 6-point lead. We're going to hold the ball. And I get it. You're trying to make it to state. You know, it's a whatever regional championship, whatever it's called, the game before you get to state. But it just kind of the game, the atmosphere, it just kind of fell flat after that. There was no rhythm. It was free throw shooting. It just, and I know this has been written about by Jeff Johnson at the Gazette and other journalists that are smarter than me around the state, that, and I'm guessing it's a financial thing. You may know this better than me as well. But would it be that hard to put a 30-second shot clock in? And I don't think it would hurt basketball. Most of these teams aren't using 30 seconds to get a shot off. And it would keep, and I saw it again today. City High lost to Johnston in the state tournament. I was watching it online. Johnston was up by 6-8 points with like 7 minutes to go in the game. Start of the fourth quarter. Let's start throwing the ball around the perimeter and playing four corners. It just kills the game. They need a shot clock in Iowa high school basketball.
Number seven.
Let them heal.
See, this is something that bothers me in sports, in baseball and football. It's more most pronounced in baseball, though. Have you seen what's been going on with the Red Sox and Chris Sale? He has elbow soreness. Yeah. He needs surgery, doesn't need surgery, needs surgery, doesn't need surgery. Spoiler alert, he needs surgery.
Denial is what that's
okay,
called.
Okay, yeah, it's exactly what it's called. I don't... baseball especially frustrates me because you can see it. I think football players play through a lot of injuries. Hockey players play through a lot of injuries. That's bad. But in baseball, you can see it. How often do you see a player go on the disabled list and they say, all right, it's going to be about 15 days. He's got this. Well, he hit another speed bump and it's going to be 15 more days. Oh, nope. He's on the 60-day DL. And what started as a hangnail ends up as he needs Tommy John surgery. This is a problem in sports. I think a lot of careers are ended prematurely because training staffs and franchises try to rush players back. That is exactly what happens in these cases. And it's denial. Like Rob said, Chris Sale is injured. We can see it. The production that he's had over the past year, and then him getting hurt at the end of last year, points to the fact that he's hurt. And his elbow is still bothering him. And one doctor says that he needs surgery. A second doctor says he needs surgery. And then you find one that says he doesn't need surgery. And they just keep trying to rehab an injury. And they make it worse and worse and worse. And you see some players not being able to come back from it. And this is... I just hate the short-sightedness sometimes of professional sports. Well, we have him for 5 years, so we can't waste a year. Well, he's not going to be any good for you. He's going to get hurt, and then you're going to miss a year anyway. This is a big problem, not just in baseball, but in football and hockey. Injuries not being allowed to heal is deterring players from having long, successful careers. And now in the NBA, they're finally getting smart about it. What is load management for? Look at Kawhi Leonard. He missed an entire year in San Antonio. He didn't like what the training staff was trying to do. They're misdiagnosing his injury. They're telling him to rehab an injury, and he's telling them, I'm hurt. I'm not able to go. He goes to the Clippers. He trusts the training staff. The Raptors, he trusts the training staff. They get him healthy. They manage the load on his body. They win an NBA championship. So I know that that's the culture of professional sports. It's the culture of college sports, to be honest. And will it ever change? Probably not. But I'm just so tired, especially in baseball, of seeing. I am so skeptical every time I hear, he's just going to miss about 10 days. It's a minor elbow soreness. And whenever you hear elbow soreness, it's never minor. But teams treat it that way. So I leave this.
Number 8.
Crashing stock.
Actually, there is one that I'm going to leave. I'm leaving this one. This is the NFL draft stock of one AJ Epenesa. If you have not heard... And you're an Iowa fan, you must have been under a rock. He did not have a great draft combine. Ran a 5.0 40. I don't know how that's going to come into play during an actual game, if he's going to have to run 40 yards to get the quarterback. But, I forget what he got on the bench. Maybe 17. Yeah.
17.
Again, it's not something that Iowa really focuses on in its weight training program. I think Tristan Wirfs did 24 reps, and I certainly would say that he's a guy that does pretty well in the weight room. And AJ's other, change of direction drills and things like that weren't bad, but I don't think you could expect him to go out there and perform like Chase Young. He's not Chase Young. He's not that type of a defensive end. But if you think this drops him down to the second round, which I've heard some people speculate, you're out of your mind. He will be a first-round pick, and my guess is he's probably still going to go in that 15 to 25 range. I still think the Falcons like him at 16. They need a pass rusher. Miami's got 3 picks. They need a pass rusher. You just don't pass up on pass rushers that look and perform as well on film as AJ Epenesa. He is a first round draft pick. Regardless of what happened in Indianapolis, I will leave the draft stock plummeting.
Number 9.
Snacks.
I love this. Did you see Thomas?
I love snacks.
Did you see Thomas Snacks Lee of Jackson State? The student manager coming off the bench for the first time in his first career game and nailing like a 40-footer.
He needs a shoe deal.
He does need a shoe deal. Winning the SWAC Player of the Week. If you haven't seen it already, it's been a viral video going around, as I mentioned. Thomas Lee, otherwise known as Snacks, a student manager. They decided to dress him for senior night. They wanted to get him in the game. They got him in the game against Arkansas Pine Bluff late. They got the ball to him in the front court, and he pulled up from just inside half court and buried a three. It was awesome to watch, as I mentioned. If you haven't seen it, look it up. Awesome.
Number 10.
All right, Rob, we're going to end this with you. Let There Be Light.
Yes, and I love this. And those of you who remember the last time I did Love It or Leave It, I like to end on a non-sports related topic. And this weekend, Alex, it's daylight savings time, Saturday night. So we get an extra hour of light, and I love this. I love longer days. I love being able to take walks at night. I love being able to drive home from this show, not in the dark, on Friday nights. It's spring is coming. It's here, and this is another sign that spring is coming, along with March Madness and NFL draft stuff and all that other good stuff that comes along in the sports world. Let there be light. I love this.
If you don't love it, leave it.
We need to take a break. We're going to wrap up hour number one of the program. Howard Balzer, longtime NFL observer, is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. We'll be back with more of the Todd Rommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn after this.
Start your next project today at Menards and save 11% off everything. Put in those new kitchen cabinets you've always wanted and save with 11% off. Insulate your home and save on energy costs. Plus, get 11% off. Add stylish storage to any room with new shelving and save with 11% off now at Menards. 11% off, good through Saturday, March 7th. Savings are a mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
I'm Mary Neubauer with the Iowa Lottery. March is National Problem Gambling Awareness Month, when we highlight and remind Iowans that help is always available 24/7 here in our state.
And I'm Eric Preuss with the Iowa Department of Public Health. Visit yourlifeiowa.org to learn more about problem gambling or to start the conversation with someone who cares by clicking on live chat or by calling 1-800-BETS-OFF.
It's free and confidential.
And it's something you can do anytime.
Geico presents Left Brain versus Right Brain.
After much deliberation, I've decided we should switch to Geico.
Hey, sounds good to me.
We could save hundreds of dollars on our car insurance.
Which, now I'm just blue skying here, we can reinvest those funds into my business idea.
Oh, not this again.
First, get some investors on board, right?
Nobody is going to invest in dental floss made of turkey jerky.
Okay, well, not with that attitude. Wow.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Twice a year, something extraordinary happens. You get access to exclusive Dell employee savings. Dell's semi-annual sale is here, and uncompromising designs are now yours for less. Save an extra 17% on Dell and Alienware computers with Intel Core processors. It's time for you to upgrade to new, modern devices with Windows 10. Save on a wide selection of top-brand electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Call 800-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/semi-annual sale. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
There's never been a better time to be a doer. Not with the Home Depot in your corner. And new digital tools on our Home Depot app. Like image search. Snap a picture with our app. Find just what you need. And our product locator will not only tell you how many we've got, it'll lead you right to them in the store. Oh, and if you can't make it to the store, we can deliver. From time-saving tools to game-changing innovations, it's a good time to be a doer at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
What gives one company the edge over another? Maybe it's not one thing,
maybe it's taking care of lots of things that help a business run smoothly. In other words, CentOS. CentOS has products that help your people stay safe and apparel programs that convey the right image. They service fire protection equipment, deliver and stock restroom supplies, and make sure facilities are clean and ready. Because when all those things work together, you're in business.
Oh, I'm ready!
Get CentOS and get ready for the workday.
Most ads interrupt your music with dialogue. This ad interrupts it with more music, and that's marginally better. Thanks, Giant Snickers Hole.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Wipers squeaking and streaking? Now's the time to change your wipers and get ready for those spring showers. We've got the deals to help you prep your ride. Right now, if you buy two Bosch Envision wiper blades, you'll get a $15 AutoZone gift card by mail or email. And next time, you can get what you need even faster. Just order online at AutoZone.com with our free same-day store pickup. Getting your job done just got easier. Restrictions and details at AutoZone.com. Get in the zone,
AutoZone. 4:58, we wrap up hour number one. If you missed anything, the podcast of the show in its entirety will be available at kgymradio.com. If you missed Love It or Leave It in the first hour, and plenty of Big Ten and Iowa basketball talk with myself and Rob Howe, who will be with me the rest of the show today, and then tomorrow's program as well, where Anthony Clemens is going to be joining us, and also probably an Illinois guest to preview the showdown at the State Farm Center on Sunday night. Hour number two of the program, we're going to get a little bit of NFL discussion going about where will Tom Brady end up. Does it feel like everything is on hold in the National Football League with the uncertainty of where the one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time will end up next season? Longtime NFL observer and analyst Howard Balzer is going to join us. He also covers the XFL. I want to get his thoughts on the future of that league and his early impressions of how things are going in the XFL. All that and a whole lot more on the way in the second hour of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn.
KGYM Cedar Rapids, 1600 AM, 106.3 and 107.5 FM. KCIA HD3 and 4, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City.
PN Radio Sports Center.
Winter Championship Week isn't until next week across college basketball, but there are some college tournaments that are underway. Quarterfinals of the Mountain West Conference Championship. The one seed, San Diego State, 28-1 entering the day, taking on the ninth-seeded Air Force Falcons. San Diego State was down by four at the half. They went on a 27-6 run. They wind up winning 73-70. San Diego State is one of the 4-1 seeds, according to ESPN's bracketologist Joe Lenardi. He projects them to be the one seed in the East. Steph Curry returns to the lineup tonight for the Golden State Warriors after missing the last 58 games with a broken left hand. Curry's going to be on a minutes restriction of 24 to 28 minutes when the Warriors play host to the Raptors. Celtics missed to do everything. Marcus Smart hit with a $35,000 fine. The result of his altercations with referees following Tuesday night's stunning overtime home loss to the Brooklyn Nets. The Claverner Nightclub at Marlins Park, a staple since the place opened in 2012, it is set to close. It's not going to open this year. I have no idea what this means for the Levitard Show and all those involved on ESPN
Coming up
Radio.
Friday, NFL free agency less than 2 weeks away, which means Brady Watch is in full effect. Brady Watch, the latest on TB12's new or not new destination. Plus Steph Curry's return, Clippers, Rockets, and more. Friday, Golic and Wingo. 6 Eastern, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
This Sports Center update was brought to you by CarePro Health Services. Connect with people and answers you need for your health care needs. Visit careprohealthservices.com.
Did you work out a little too hard? Or maybe overdo it with yard work? Whatever it was, you're feeling it today.
Ooh.
So let CarePro Home Medical help. CarePro Home Medical has something to soothe that soreness, including BioFreeze, ice packs, cold therapy wraps, and pain relief devices to get you back to feeling better. Even weekend warriors need a little help sometimes. Visit CarePro Home Medical in Cedar Rapids or Coralville and connect with people and answers you need.
It's a wireless world, and everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds.
So go with Raycons. Raycons start about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing. And Raycon's latest model, the E25s, are the best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a comfortable noise-isolating fit. See what the hype is about. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/will. buyraycon.com/WILL. That's buyraycon.com/will.
Say goodnight to frozen folded eggs and barely there bacon, America, because Wendy's is now serving up breakfast, and it's going to be America's favorite. They just don't know it yet.
These are a few of my favorite things.
We're talking freshly cracked eggs, oven-cooked bacon. How did I even do mornings before this breakfast goodness? Come into Wendy's to try our new breakfast Baconator, the Frosty Chino, and the Honey Butter Chicken Biscuit. See you in the morning. You up for this?
Favorite things, yeah.
At participating Wendy's.
503, welcome back. Alex Kuhn alongside Rob Howe. Buttons, our producer, on the other side of the glass. Hour number two underway on all four KGYM frequencies, 107.5 FM, the Gym OT, 106.3 and 102.3 FM, as well as 1600 AM, the historic main gym. And you can visit our website, kgymradio.com, as I mentioned, for the podcast of today's show, which is going to include our next guest, Howard Balzer, longtime NFL analyst, now XFL analyst. Howard, this has to be a busy time of year for you, following my beloved St. Louis Battlehawks, NFL free agency, the Tom Brady saga, pretty much everything going on right now here in the early stages of March.
Yeah, it really is. And as you mentioned, the league year begins in a little less than 2 weeks. And we have that. Like you said, we have the XFL, obviously draft talk heating up after the combine last week, the proposed new collective bargaining agreement has been sent to all players that were union members last year, with about a week. Next Thursday is the deadline for everybody to vote, so certainly everybody will be waiting for that. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on right now in the world of football.
Let's start with the collective bargaining agreement, because this is always interesting anytime this comes around. NFLPA and Demora Smith sort of always kind of hint that be ready for a battle to the players. They told them during the season, save your money, get ready for a possible work stoppage. And the owners released this proposed deal, and now the players have kind of gone through meetings. The players' representatives have gone through meetings, and now they're going to go to a vote. And it seems like there's a split between the players who are making a lot of money, the guys who have their second contracts and got those contract extensions, and pretty much the 70% of the league that doesn't have it. It seems like is sort of in favor of it and might push this deal through.
Yeah, and I think that partially that's what the league was trying to accomplish with this, with the increase in roster size, the increase in practice squads, increase in minimum salaries, with all of those things. And yeah, there's a lot, you know, a large majority of the players, or a pretty good majority of the players, are on minimum salary contracts. And I think most of the quote, the veteran guys, they're opposed. The biggest thing I think they're opposed to is 17 games. And the younger guys, though, they're going, minimum salary guys, they're going, well, I don't mind a 17th game. That gives me another, you know, another game of salary. And so I think that's probably will be the tipping point. But I think it's kind of a little bit of good for those veteran players is that they've, you know, cut back even more on contact. There's a lot of little things like that in the deal that when you look at it, there seems to me there's a lot of things that the league has put in that should be attractive to a good number of the players. And of course, you're always going to say, well, we should get a bigger percentage of the revenue. But the one reality of this is that the whole notion that potentially, and I don't see, you know, they always try to scare people and say, well, the revenue could go down. And maybe if there's not a CBA in terms of starting new TV agreements, you might not get as much out of TV. And so then the percentage might be higher, your total might be lower because the TV deals weren't as great. And so that's pretty much the word that the league is putting out, that this gives them the opportunity to negotiate new TV contracts in a tremendous environment with the networks knowing there's another 10 years of labor peace coming down the road. And so that means overall, even if you get a little less of a percentage, there's more money put into the pie. There's more money being put in for the salary cap, more money being put in for benefits. And so you would think that this is going to pass. And DeMaurice Smith, who negotiated it all, you know, he's not coming out and suggesting that players should vote for it, but I think he truly believes that this is the best deal the players are going to get. There's no guarantee that if you don't sign it and then wait till next year that the deal is going to be any better. And who knows? It might end up being worse. And with the improvements this coming year, which there wouldn't be if you don't sign a new agreement, with increases in minimum salary and roster size and practice squads and all those things, those are going to be benefits that won't be available for the players. So it would be surprising to me at this point if it gets voted down. The funny thing, Alex, is this. They sent out today to all the players the proposal. It's 456 pages. How many of these players do you think are going to read it?
I'm not reading 456 pages.
I mean, they're going to be leafing through it and saying, okay, what's this here? How about this? How about that? And a lot of other things. But, of course, that's what the player reps, you know, are communicating to the players. Any player has a question, they'll answer them, because certainly most of them aren't going to read through the whole thing. But like I said, so much of the stuff that has come out, I think, is a pretty positive nature for the players. And the other thing is, you can't put a price on labor peace. And that's usually a good thing.
Howard, the scenario of a legendary quarterback leaving a franchise that he's identified with, whether it be Joe Montana or, you know, Peyton Manning, we've seen it happen before. Obviously, we're at that stage now with Tom Brady. What needs to happen for him to stay in New England, and what are the chances of that happening?
That's the question of the day, really. And I don't know if anybody except Tom Brady truly knows that answer. And from the Patriots' standpoint, it almost seems as if for it to happen, and is that we know Robert Kraft, the owner, has come out and said that he wants him back. There seems to be some question about how badly Bill Belichick wants him back. And I think that might be what's totally needed, is for Belichick to totally embrace the situation and say, hey, we've got to go forward with you. This is where we've made our mark. However many years left, we're going to do everything in our power to keep this being a Super Bowl caliber team and those things. You don't know how much that would help, though, because the unanswered question is, how much does Tom Brady truly want to go out into the free agent market for the first time and see what's out there? There's all the rumors, all the speculation about this team and that team and all that, but it's not only hearing what's out there in terms of money, but it's where is the right fit? Everyone talks about the players around them in New England. Well, you ask that question in other teams. Maybe he finds another team. Well, okay, right now they have some better players around them. But who's the offensive coordinator? You know, who's the head coach? Is he truly going to be comfortable with everything being totally new? Now, we saw what Peyton Manning did when he went to Denver, and he was able to pretty much dictate a lot of what the offense was. And so you would think that anyone signing Tom Brady is going to realize they've got to do that for him. So all of these aspects of it make it a very fluid situation. I've said from the beginning, my sense is the thing that makes the most sense is for him to go back to New England. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. And it's, you know, it's less than 2 weeks till the new league year starts on March 18th. And if he goes into free agency, things I would think are going to move pretty quickly, because a lot of other teams that would want Brady are going to be concentrating on that. And other quarterbacks could be waiting around seeing what's going to happen. What will the Patriots do? How long do they wait? What do they want to do? Do they want to try to sign Phillip Rivers? Do they want to make a trade for Andy Dalton? All these rumors are out there. How long can they afford to wait before guys that they might be interested in go somewhere else? So that's what makes this a very, very fascinating situation that I would think would wrap up pretty quickly once the 18th rolls around. But I don't know that anybody knows. I don't think anybody, even Tom Brady right now, probably doesn't know the answer to what it's going to be.
Do you sense at all that either Belichick or Brady wants to show or prove that they can win without the other guy?
You know, it's a popular question, and it very well could be a little bit of, you know, of that thinking. But I don't know that you – I mean, it sounds fanciful, and it sounds like it makes sense from either guy's point of view, but does it make sense to do that? Are you going to really drive a decision – by either one of them saying, well, let you know, I want to show that I can win somewhere else. Or in Bill Belichick's case, I want to show that I can win with a different quarterback. Well, that's easy to say. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy to do. And that's, you know, that's the huge, huge aspect of this. Having said all that, I don't know that it taints either's legacy if it doesn't work out. Because, hey, Brady could come back. And they don't make another Super Bowl. Who knows? Maybe every year don't even make the playoffs. I mean, I don't think that would happen, but hey, you never know. But I think that, to me, you can't have that drive this decision. It's got to be the best for Tom Brady, what he truly believes is the best for himself and his best chance. Because he's got to go somewhere where he truly believes that he has a really good chance to win another championship. And from the Patriots standpoint, they have to look at it and say, hey, we definitely have to plan for his successor, whenever that will be. But it's still a lot, to me, it's a lot better to knowing who that guy is going to be and gives you the chance, and that's Tom Brady. So, it like I said, it makes it such a fascinating discussion, and we'll watch how it unfolds in the next few weeks.
Howard Balzer, longtime NFL analyst, joining us on the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. And, Howard, I asked this question with only about 20% sarcasm, but – the last time that we saw something like this, Tom Brady was posting this strange photo before the Super Bowl, and everybody got up in arms, and it was for Hulu Has Live Sports, and just completely trolled all of us. I'm looking at these reports, and I'm seeing Jeff Darlington saying that he'd be shocked if Tom Brady comes back to the Patriots. You have Julian Edelman on the sidelines of the basketball game sitting next to Tom Brady saying he's coming back. Then you see other reports saying he's coming back. These reports are coming from somewhere. Is the Brady camp trying to kind of throw us off the scent at this point and kind of have a laugh at all of our expenses?
Yeah, they might be. I mean, they might be. I don't know how much they're really saying, though. And I think it's, you know, a lot of people trying to put one and one together, and whatever right. It adds up to, who really knows? I'm surprised that anybody would say they'd be shocked if he came back to the Patriots. I don't know why anyone would be shocked if that happens when you're talking about the legacy that has been him and Belichick and the Patriots for basically two decades, and to be shocked that they would now continue that for another 2-3 years, whatever it might end up being. You know, maybe you think the other will happen, but to say you'd be shocked if it does, that might be a little bit of a stretch. But, you know, everyone's trying to have the hot take and all this. And so, yeah, there could be a little bit of this, you know, when he puts out something and trying to figure out what he really means and what is he trying to say. But like I said, I truly believe that no one really knows. And who knows? Maybe behind the scenes, they all do know what's going to happen. But they're certainly not going to let anybody know at this point. And so, once again, that's what adds all the intrigue to it.
It seems like the Trent Williams Redskins marriage is pretty much beyond repair. I saw they are put out there that he can seek trades. What's out there for him, and what can the Redskins expect to get back for him at this point?
Well, the big part of it is not so much the trade, because I thought all indications were that he might be able to work this out for him to return. With the departure of Bruce Allen in the front office, a new head coach, there seemed to be both sides seem to be perhaps wanting to make this work. But it's not just coming back; it's also willing to redo his contract. Mm. And so that could very well be the issue that is complicating matters with him returning. But it also could complicate where he goes to, and who wants. You know, there's some pretty good tackles that are going to be on the open market. And so what does somebody want to pay for, you know, for Trent Williams, who did not play last year and prior to that had some injuries. And, you know, he's not a youngster anymore. So I think all those things enter into it, because obviously left tackles are a premium. But the question is, when you get to his age and has had some of the injury issues, how much is that premium worth if you can get somebody else you think might be just as good for a little bit less, or get somebody in the draft, whatever it might be. So we can all guess where he might end up, but that's all it would be. It would be a guess. But like I said, I think the biggest question right now is what the contract will be, and not if in fact he's traded, and that could end up being the thing that that keeps a deal from happening.
Howard, it's crazy to me that the Jacksonville Jaguars were just in the AFC Championship game, nearly in the Super Bowl 3 seasons ago, and that secondary that helped them get there, all of them are gone. Jalen Ramsey's gone. They just traded A.J. Bouye to the Broncos. Aaron Colvin's gone. Tashawn Gibson is gone. Barry Church is gone. It just seems like Jacksonville's in another one of those rebuild modes. Is this sort of a cautionary tale of what can happen, even if you have a great defense, if you have inept front office and inept quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and I think I don't know that I thought that, you know, Blake Bortles wasn't inept when he was there. In fact, that year that they almost got to the Super Bowl, he was their quarterback,
right?
And they felt that he was still going to be able to get the job done. And then the next season, they actually got off to a pretty good start, and then it began falling apart after that. That was when Leonard Fournette got hurt. They had an injury in training camp with Marquise Lee, their best receiver, and he was unavailable all year. And then the defense didn't play as well, and all of a sudden it all fell apart. So it's a combination of all those things. And then, you know, and then last year that, oh gosh, Telvin, I'm trying to remember the linebacker's
Telvin
name.
Smith.
Smith. Yeah. I thought I was thinking it was Smith, but I wasn't 100% sure. He suddenly retired just before training camp. Then they have the contract thing with Yannick Ngakoue, and now they're saying he's not going to be back. He'll be leaving. And so, yeah, that's that. As good as that defense was, there's nobody left. And then on top of everything, they spend, and I thought they were they spend crazy money for Nick Foles. And, I mean, just because Nick Foles did a nice job in Philadelphia in what was a perfect situation and almost a no-pressure situation, because when he was coming in, he was the backup, and he wasn't expected to do that good. Well, all of a sudden, now you go to a new team with this giant contract, and you're expected to be the savior. And Nick Foles is not a savior. All I have to do, guys, is go back 5 years when the Rams traded for Nick Foles after his ridiculous year. I think he had 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. The Rams traded for him. He had one good game to open the season against Seattle. And they were, oh, this guy's the answer. And then he went in the tank after that. And he was just average at best as a quarterback, you know, for the Rams. So I'm not saying the guy's not a good player, but he's not a great one that was worth that kind of money. So yeah, they made a lot of bad decisions, and now all of a sudden they're just shepherding draft picks and making deals and doing this and doing that, and essentially changing the entire team. And everyone's still wondering who's going to be the quarterback. Is it going to be Foles? Or do they move him on? And is it going to be Gardner Minshew? But it's a team that is talking about playing multiple games in London each year. So they're not making any friends with the fan base either. So that's a difficult situation there. And by the way, for a city that never should have had a team, it should be here in St. Louis. And then St. Louis probably wouldn't be, you know, anointing an XFL team if the expansion team back in 95 had been St. Louis instead of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Howard, this is kind of a broad-based question, but just in general terms, you know, Iowa had 5 guys at the NFL Combine with varying degrees of performance. How much does the Combine weigh into how teams set up their draft board? Is it? I would think that it would be more on tape than on what they call the Underwear Olympics.
Well, it is more on tape, and what the Combine is, the biggest thing, the biggest things from the Combine are the medicals and the interviews as teams meet players. And it's not just the combine, it's then when they have personal visits with guys who come into the team when they go see him at pro days and talk to him a little bit there. That's what the off season that includes the combine is all about. All the other stuff, I think, is basically trying to put the gift wrap on the package, where you pretty much know what you think, you have a pretty good idea what the guy is, and then you want to see if some of the athletic numbers match or don't match what the player has done. And if they match, or maybe you're even a little better than you thought, it kind of solidifies things. If all of a sudden guy runs slower, he doesn't appear as strong, or whatever it might be, it raises some red flags. And so those are things that you then investigate a little bit more and wait to see what happens at the pro days. Because as we all know, the combine is one day, you know, all these drills and all that stuff is one day. Guys can have a bad day. I mean, that happens in all walks of life, and certainly in the NFL seasons it happens with guys. And so you just have to put all of that into context in terms of doing the overall evaluation of the player. But you have to be careful of, and I don't think teams do it as much. I think there's a lot of overreaction among us, and when I say us, I mean media, draft people, because we hear the draft people give their opinions, and we think somehow that's gospel. And I know that those guys do a lot of, they do hard work, and they're good at evaluating players. But they're evaluating, let's remember, they're evaluating players in a vacuum. Every team evaluates guys differently for their systems, for their schemes, for their coaches, whatever it is. The draft guys like Daniel Jeremiah or, you know, whoever it is, Mel Kiper, they're just doing it from the player they see, not where they might fit with different teams. And I think everyone, when they see where players are drafted, they have to realize that. It doesn't mean that all the time the teams make the right decision, but they're doing it based on their own way of doing things. But I think generally they all know what they're getting out of the combine, how much it, I don't know if it's probably not possible to put a percentage on it, but like I said, it's just another piece of the puzzle in terms of making an evaluation of a guy and how you see him projecting to play in the National Football League.
Howard, it's time to give the people what they want. We're here in Battle Hawk country here in Iowa, apparently, and the Jonathan Hayes, a former Iowa Hawkeye, Chuck Long calling the plays, a 3-1 start. I know you're doing some work for 590 KFNS covering the Battle Hawks. What's your early impressions of the league and then the job that Jonathan Hayes and Chuck Long and crew have done so far in the early portions of the season?
Well, I think all the teams have done a pretty good job, like the Alliance did last year, where you're putting teams together from scratch and then trying to bring them together as teams without a whole lot of practice and knowing you have a short season to get it all together. Let's remember, you know, this weekend is the halfway point in this season. It seems like it just started and it's half over after this weekend's games. But I think the Battlehawks, one of the best evaluations they made, and I wondered about it. I didn't criticize it because no one ever knows. But they went the route with the quarterback of not going for a retread guy, a guy that's had some NFL time but for whatever reason isn't in the league, like a Cardale Jones, like a Landry Jones, like an Aaron Murray, like some of these other guys that there are. And the two best teams in the league right now, the Battle Hawks and Houston, have guys that didn't have virtually any NFL experience. P.J. Walker in Houston was on the practice squad of the Colts for a couple of years, but basically never got a chance. Jordan Ta'amu, the Battle Hawks quarterback, and like I said, I wondered about it when he was their main quarterback they got. They anointed him. They pretty much almost said from day one he was going to be the starter. And this is a guy who was pretty good for a year and a half at Ole Miss, but last year didn't even go to a training camp until late July, maybe early August, and was with the Texans for about 3 weeks or so until the cut to 53, and that was it. Never even got invited for a tryout or a practice squad during the entire regular season. But they saw something in him they liked, and he has been a revelation. And now, again, it's at the level that this league is playing, but he can run, he's tough, he makes, you know, he's making, you know, good decisions. The only interceptions he's had this year came on two times he was hit while throwing, and the other where he thought it was a free play because there was a neutral zone violation that the officials didn't call and he thought there would be a flag. So he's making good decisions, making plays when they have to. They're running the ball. The one thing I'll say this about what Jonathan Hayes did and Trey Brown. Trey Brown might be a name that doesn't ring familiar with St. Louis fans, but he's the son of Theotis Brown, who was a football Cardinals draft pick back in, I think it was 1979. And he was very much involved, obviously, in the scouting and the evaluation of all these players who are getting picked. And the one thing they did, is they went long and hard for offensive and defensive linemen. And right now, you could argue the Battlehawks are the best defense in the league. They've allowed the fewest touchdowns. They're near the top. And I'm not sure what the rankings are, but they've only allowed 20% conversions on third down. They've been very good on offense on third down at over 50%. So they're doing those little things right that you have to do to win football games. And so you got to give them a lot of credit for what they've put together. And, you know, right now, like I said, it looks like the Battlehawks in Houston are the two best teams, and now they got to continue to prove it over the final 6 weeks of the season.
I hear a lot of people bringing up the fact that the scores are down, the points aren't being scored at a high rate, and I respond, offensive football isn't just developed over 5 weeks and in a month of training camp. It's hard to build that kind of chemistry on the offensive side of the football. You think we're going to continue to see that league-wide grow as the season moves on and now into the back half of the year?
I think we will. And I think one of the things, to me, it wasn't scoring points. It was the points being scored by losing teams, because the point differential in the league is around, the average point differential in games is around 13, and it got better last week. It was 10, and it should have been lower because there were three games, two were decided by seven, one was decided by three, and then you had a 25 point game where Tampa Bay has shut out Washington 25-0, and so that point differential has been an issue. But I think overall points scored really haven't been. And one of the things that people forget is I calculated all this after week three, and it's still pretty close after week four. After week three, the XFL was between 3 and 4 points less per game than the NFL. Only three or four points less per game. But guess what? They were losing. The XFL was losing about 2.5 points a game on average because they're not kicking extra points. I mean, a lot of the points in the NFL are 94% that are made on kicks after touchdowns. And so the XFL was slow in the gate of doing that. Last week was their best week. They were 8-for-15 on conversions, and they actually had more points, 16, on the 15 conversions. That's the first time that happened. The first 3 weeks, it was way, way down. And so, like I said, they weren't getting those points, and that was keeping the average points per game down. But they still had teams scoring 30. They had a bunch of teams scoring in the 20s. And I think overall the over-unders are low, mainly because a lot of times the losing teams aren't scoring a bunch of points. And, you know, we'll see about those losing teams. A lot of times teams lose because the offensive line is an issue. The quarterback play isn't very good. That's if your quarterback isn't that good, that's not going to improve overnight. But the first point you made was the apt one. Put teams together, and they're playing together for the first time, and it takes a while for offenses to come together, playing against defenses that, yes, they're not NFL caliber, but they still have a lot of guys that can run and that are athletic. I think the tackling, for the most part, has been pretty good in this league. And so that has an impact on the points being scored and how it's all being played. So I think overall, the ratings are pretty good. The attendance in most places, you know, they have some issues in L.A. or New York in attendance, but I think people could have probably predicted that. But I don't know if you guys saw the story, is that the Battlehawks, for their next home game on March 21st, coincidentally, maybe, against Los Angeles, they're opening up the upper bowl.
I did see this,
yes. At least for the time being, they're opening up one side of the upper bowl and see how the ticket sales go. And they're hoping for a crowd of over 40,000 for that game. And who knows, maybe it'll even be more. It's going to be a very interesting thing to see what happens with the attendance. But obviously here in Seattle, the attendance has been really, really good.
Howard Balzer, thank you so much for joining us. You can give him a follow on Twitter. Appreciate the time. And we'll talk to you again down the line.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
5:32, your XFL minutes. We are in Battle Hawk country.
I know the segment's over, but I'm leaving the XFL.
Whoa.
I knew that would hit a nerve. I'm happy for St. Louis, but the league's tough to watch, man.
Yeah, right now it definitely is. But we'll see if it improves. As I said, you knew it was going to be, right? You can make all kinds of rule changes. You can try to make it more favorable for the offense, but offensive football it's hard. It's difficult to come up with from scratch. You don't just put together a team and learn a playbook in the course of 2 months and have it work very effectively. It's just not how it works. So I figured that the totals would be low, and at least for the first year. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to get a whole lot better as far as the offenses go. And you got a lot of old school offensive minds in this league too, which doesn't help anything either.
And mediocre quarterbacks.
But I'm still tuning in, still giving it a shot, because why not? We're in the early stages of March, and the conference tournament play hasn't started yet. The NCAA tournament hasn't started yet, so. As I said, why not? What we need to do right now, I need to get you your final big board update of the day. Luka Garza, as expected, was named a semifinalist for the Naismith Trophy. Garza is one of 10 players on the list that will eventually name the most outstanding player in college basketball. He is a front runner for the award, as he's averaging nearly 24 points per game and 10 rebounds per game for the Hawkeyes this season. The Iowa women will play in the nightcap of tomorrow night's quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament against either Minnesota or Ohio State. 11th-seeded Minnesota defeated 14th-seeded Penn State yesterday to advance into a matchup with 6th-seeded Ohio State. The matchup will start tonight at around 8 p.m. Central Time. UNI is going to do a little bit of TV watching as well, as in just about a half an hour, they're going to watch the game that will decide who they play tomorrow at noon. Drake and Illinois State are playing in the 8-9 game from Enterprise Center in St. Louis. And that game's going to get underway, as I mentioned, at 6 p.m., so just under a half hour away from that contest. A final earlier from the 5A semifinals in Des Moines, the state girls basketball tournament, Johnston ended Iowa City High's season with a 71-61 victory, and going on right now on KGYM 107.5 FM, we have a matchup in 4A, a semifinal game between CenterPoint Urbana and North Scott. What we need to do right now, we are desperately overdue for a break. We'll step aside, come back, and get you a little bit more discussion on the fallout from the NFL Combine. I wanted to pick Rob's brain on that as well, because he brought up AJ Epenesa. We'll discuss that and a lot more to wrap up today's Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. All of that on the way after this.
This is the Xavier Report, presented by Schimberg Company.
The Xavier boys basketball team season ended with a 69-52 loss at Central DeWitt in a Class 3A district final last week. The Saints ended the season with 11 wins for the campaign. The Xavier girls basketball team had a pair of All-Mississippi Valley Conference selections. Caitlin Daniels was on the MVC Mississippi Division first team, while Avery Beckman landed on the second team. And congratulations to Tom Lilly and his staff, who were selected as both Division and Metro Coaching Staff of the Year. Congratulations to bowler Dale Weaver, who was named the MVC Mississippi Division Bowler of the Year. Eric Triplett and Tyler Zog were also named first team All-Division. Olivia Nolte was selected first team All-Division on the girls' side.
The Xavier Report is brought to you by Schimberg Company, family owned and serving the Cedar Rapids community since 1918. Schimberg Company, proudly supporting the Saints.
Don't miss the madness. March is the season of madness, and IMON's high-speed internet will make sure you can track your bracket, stream every game, and stay connected with your friends and family. For a limited time, you can get IMON's 100 megabit internet for only $55 per month. You'll be mad for IMON's reliable high-speed internet and superior 24/7 customer support. Sign up before March 31st to score this deal. Go to imon.net/radio to switch to IMON for only $55 per month, and find out how you can also score a free month of internet service. New residential customers only. Other conditions apply.
Strength. Precision. This trophy is not given. It must be earned. The 2020 NCAA Division III Wrestling Championships. March 13th and 14th at the U.S. Cellular Center in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Visit ncaa.com/tickets to get your tickets today.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, helpwanted.com salutes the employee of the month. The one employee you can't live without. The others, let's just call them Dave.
Hey, Dave, why is the other Dave chopping down a tree out front?
Well, Mr. Employee of the Month, you said you needed some sets.
I said I needed that report ASAP, as in right away.
Oh, so what does that have to do with the tree?
Oh, boy.
We believe local businesses should be packed with more local employees of the month and fewer Daves. We make it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, helpwanted.com. Local jobs that work.
Tune in to KGYM Fridays during the gym class for the announcement of our Athlete of the Week. Proudly brought to you by Sheet Metal Workers Local 263 of Eastern and Central Iowa.
Rob, I didn't know you were a basketball coach.
Yes. On the side.
Welcome back to the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. Todd Brommelkamp out today and tomorrow. Buttons, our producer on the other side of the glass. Rob Howe filling in for Todd. Rob Howe of HawkeyeNation.com. You're a basketball coach. And you have a big game tonight? Is that the case? Is that what I'm hearing?
Regular season finale tonight at North Dodge, 7:30. Iowa City Energy. Third grade girls basketball squad taking on the Regina. I guess they go by Regals. I guess all the Regina programs are probably Regals, so yeah, we'll match up with them. We got to improve a little.
What's the line in this game?
Clear Creek last week, we had a little trouble on the backboards, kind of like Iowa Tuesday night.
Okay.
So
got to box out.
Had to work on that, yeah, a little bit.
One of my brothers now is officiating. He got conned into officiating kindergarten and first grade basketball. And he tells the story every single time where there are people in the stands complaining, like, oh, you didn't call this, you didn't call that. And he's like, listen, folks, I've had to explain twice to Timmy that you have to step behind the line to inbound the ball and not step across. So pardon me if I don't call every travel, but third grade, they're making threes, they're dunking.
No.
Okay. But still a very developmental stage of the basketball learning curve.
There is a demarcation line on the court where, like, there's no pressing because that would just be anarchy if you were allowing.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a line where the defender cannot go over that line to defend. And that rule is not very well enforced. And so you still have a lot of turnovers.
It's not well enforced.
No, the officials kind of swallow their whistles.
It seems pretty cut and dry.
Like, yeah, it's a line. And the line is red.
There's the line. You see the line?
Don't cross the line.
Don't cross the line, but I guess they let them anyway.
My daughter's a chucker.
Is she?
Yeah, she shoots. Man.
Guard? Wing?
She's more of a wing.
Playing the two or the three?
Yeah, and she's, I don't have to tell her to shoot.
That's good.
She shoots.
That's good. I
think we're favored tonight, by the way. I don't know what the line is, but
minus five. Is it on the home court? Is home court a huge advantage?
It's North Dodge. It's everybody's home court.
That's
the league that we're in. Interesting enough, we had Matt Gatens on the show on Friday for the big hour. His mother started this league.
Really?
When he was young, because they were looking for a league beyond the Iowa City Rec League, so it's the North Dodge Athletic League. Giving North Dodge a lot of pub tonight.
Yeah, you are. Before this huge matchup, does this have playoff implications?
I don't think we have playoffs.
No playoffs.
Season ends, and we move on.
In the NBA tonight, Steph Curry making his long-awaited return
Does it matter?
No, they're bad.
They're bad.
They're really bad. That's the scary thing about the NBA right now.
They're not as bad as the Knicks.
Well,
are they?
Let's see. They're worse.
Really?
Yeah. So the Golden State Warriors are 14-48. They have the worst record in the NBA. And the question is, why would you bring Steph Curry back this season? Doesn't make much sense. Just sit him out the rest of the year. This is a wasted year. They're going to be good next season.
Isn't there talk that Klay Thompson's trying to get back this year too?
Why? What are you doing? What is the point of that? I get he wants to show that he's back and show his teammates that he's not sitting out. You know what? Those guys are more important to your team than the guys that are there. Quite honest. And I think those guys realize that. I think that based on the fact that they, outside of the injuries last year, would have won, their fourth straight title?
Yep.
And all of a sudden, now they're the worst team in the league? I think they get the picture. I think they get the picture that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and, you know what, Kevin Durant, he's gone now. He's also injured. Those guys are important. But they're going to get those guys back next season. They're going to get a lottery pick.
Yeah.
They could get the number one overall pick. Could you imagine Obi Toppin in a Golden State Warriors uniform or James Wiseman in a Golden State Warriors uniform? And be right back on top. And the rumblings that Giannis might want to join them too. If you thought Kevin Durant with them was good, I can't wait to see Giannis with the Golden State Warriors.
I'd be bummed if he left Milwaukee. I get it, you know. Anthony Davis is in L.A. now. The stars want to be where the lights are bright, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think John on the First Federal Credit Union text line is kind of onto something. Steph is coming back because Golden State wants to pretend they're not tanking. They don't want to get a call from the NBA office like, hey, is he healthy? It was a broken hand, right? That's like a 5-week thing, and he's been out for 4 months. What's going on?
The NBA doesn't enforce that, do they? They don't enforce that tanking.
So I do remember the first example of load management that I can remember was the San Antonio Spurs sitting out Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker, all the old guys on their team. And I believe they did get fined for that. But they don't fine the Clippers for sitting Kawhi Leonard on the back end of a back to back. I do remember a couple years ago with the Chicago Bulls where the Bulls were not playing like Robin Lopez, even though they were the worst team in the league because they were winning too many. They went through like a 3-game winning streak, so they sat Robin Lopez. They sat all their starters for a game, and the NBA called them up like, "Hey, no, you can't do that." That's the problem right now with the regular season. You're towing the line of it being completely useless, and you may not even see your favorite player. And I've said this before. I said this on Twitter. You can follow me at AlexKuhn523. I think a lot of the thing about the NBA that people don't realize is I think that people don't like it. Because those guys make it look way too easy. Those guys are so good that they make it look way too easy. And you look at college basketball, and the gap between college basketball and the NBA is so large, but the pace of the NBA versus the pace of college basketball is so different that people kind of like the fact that there's more energy, there's more, what's the word for it? There's more urgency every single night. And the NBA, I don't blame you for 82 games not being able to sit there and stomach all 82 of them, or even like the first two rounds of the playoffs. Although this year may be a little bit different.
LeBron has played 57 of 60 games.
Yes, he has. That's...
What's he, 35?
Yeah, 36.
Yeah.
Year 17.
He gives the people what they want.
Yeah, well, he's also, I love LeBron, but he's sat out games before. He's missed 10 to 12 games a year for like the last 4 years, and he's complaining about other people doing it. I don't understand that. But we're gonna get into a lot more tomorrow. Maybe we can discuss. Did you guys discuss the combine last week?
No, we were on the air when Tristan Wirfs was like going out of his mind.
4.86
Yeah. Yeah, I looked up Robert Gallagher ran a 4.97
And that's pretty good for some, was he 330 pounds?
Gallery, he was similar size, I think, to...
he's a little taller, like 6'7".
Nicknamed the Mountain.
Yeah, he's a large human being.
They, I was telling Todd this last week, they used to let us into the pro day at the old bubble at Iowa. And I was standing on the sideline as Gallery ran his 40, and it was like a train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're standing at, you know, when you stand like on a platform, you know, in Chicago or New York, when the train goes by you.
Yeah, for sure.
It's what it's, you can feel the wind sound like. Yeah.
Gusting. Did you ever take like the second to think, what would it be like to get hit by him?
Yeah, just standing in front of, like if you watch Wirfs run that 40, what would it be like if you were at like 30 yards and he hit you full on? You could just feel your bones snap.
With him, though, I've been discussing this.
36 and a half inch is sick.
Ridiculous. And that's the thing with him. He's not even scratching the surface of how good of a football player he can be.
Had a higher vertical than CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. Higher vertical than those two. That's crazy, man.
That is absolutely insane. But I'm going to be interested to see what they do with him. Because he's a right tackle. That's his dominant side.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he did a good job when he moved over to left tackle. But I still have that question. Why didn't they keep him there, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, the reasoning they gave was that Alaric couldn't play the right side. He was more comfortable playing the left side. But, and they tried, I forget, maybe when they were sophomores.
Okay.
They tried at the beginning of spring to have Tristan play the left side and Alaric play the right. And Alaric just didn't look good. He was uncomfortable. And Tristan could play both seamlessly. So that's kind of what they went with. The one thing with Tristan is he just turned 21. He's still really young. You know, his best football is ahead of him. I don't think you would disagree with that, right?
Oh, no. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that he's even gotten 30 or 40% of the football player he can be. And I was chatting with my younger brother about this, and he said he's watched a lot of Tristan Wirfs. And coming into this year, he's pointing to some things. He's like, there's some things he needs to work on. He needs to get more flexible. He needs to be able to bend well or bend better. And is he a left tackle? Can he make that transition? There were some other technical things that he was pointing at. And this year, he just made huge strides. He got so much better from his sophomore to his senior season. He got so much better from his freshman to his sophomore season. You remember when we had James Daniels on the Big Hour about a year ago? And I asked him about Tristan Wirfs freshman year. And he's like, yeah, he was out there choke slamming people. It was like the WWE. His technique was a little bit off. You knew that you had a lot to work with. You had a block of marble, and you just needed to chisel it into a masterpiece. And this, to his credit, the work that he put in, the coaching that he got at Iowa, put him in a position to be a top 15 pick. And I still don't think that he needs to go to a really good offensive line coach. That's the one thing. If he goes to a Bill Callahan or someone like that, he's going to have a great career. But that's what it comes down to, coaching. And the left tackle thing, he played a little bit there when Alaric was hurt?
Yeah, he did play there when Alaric was out. He flipped to the left side.
And he did a pretty solid job on that side of the ball. So maybe that gives...
And you think about it, did you see him play in high school?
I did.
When you got a guy like that playing at Mount Vernon, as much as you tell him, okay, we're working on fundamentals, he doesn't really need them.
No.
He's just swatting guys out of the way. Because he's playing against, what, like 5'11", 220-pound defensive ends.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the thing. Like you talked about coaching, he's going to get some when he now he doesn't have to go to worry about going to classes or, you know, any of the extra stuff that goes with playing college football. Now he can focus all of his attention on his craft. And you've talked to Tristan. He's a smart kid. I think I'm really excited to see where his career can go. And he's going to be really rich.
He will be here very shortly.
I don't think Mama Wirfs is going to be working at the Blair's Ferry Target much longer if she's still working there.
Third week of April. So yeah. We're coming up on that. What we need to do right now, we need to take our final break of the day. We'll wrap things up, get you ready for a Friday edition of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn featuring Rob Howe of HawkeyeNation.com. More on the way after this.
Hey guys, it's time to get ready for outside living again at Vernon Village True Value.
Yeah, Jim, they're the only area distributor for the new Weber 24-inch wood pellet smoker, so you can smoke, grill, or sear right in the backyard. Just $999.
Right, Hal. And Scott's four-step lawn program is just $64.99 with rebate and covers 5,000 square feet.
Hey, want their ad delivered to your phone?
Yeah.
Just text Vernon Village, all one word, to 71441.
Vernon Village True Value, 3501 Mount Vernon Road, Southeast, Cedar Rapids.
You get your sports fix on KGYM. Now, satisfy your need for smart rock on Smart FM. Just John gets you going in the morning from 6 until 10. Greg's with you middays and serves up hot and fresh smart rock on the Smart Rock Smorgasbord. And Rick's got all the best tunes for your drive home from 3 to 7. Smart FM also offers extracurricular activities on the weekends, like Live from the Soundboard and Where It's At. When you need smart rock, there's only one place to get it. Smart FM, 95.1 Cedar Rapids, 98.5 Iowa City.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. And right now, get your first online visit totally free when you go to forhims.com/joy. Sure beats paying for an in-office doctor's appointment, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need to deal with awkward face-to-face conversations to get your prescription. Hims connects you to doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe the medication. And a pharmacy sends it right to your door. Hims makes it affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/joy. That's forhims.com/joy for your free online visit. forhims.com/joy.
So are you the type of guy that wants to look put together but doesn't want to spend hours shopping? I hear you. This is why there's Stitch Fix, your personal styling service that delivers hand-picked clothes right to you. Stitch Fix is simple and convenient. Sign up in just a few minutes. Try new styles in the comfort of your own home. And there's no subscription required ever. So, isn't it time to refresh your look? Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
From Warner Brothers Pictures.
All right, guys, look.
Redemption isn't won.
The little things add up. Let's do all the little things right.
It's earned.
We have to trust each other.
You got this.
Yes, Coach.
We have to have faith.
Academy Award winner Ben Affleck.
That's right. And have faith.
1, 2, 3,
they haven't been knocked down and had to get back up. They don't know what it is to fight. Let's go!
Fight for the way back tomorrow. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
We wrap things up here on a Thursday. Thank you for tuning in to the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. Rob Howe filling in for Todd Brommelkamp. Thank you to Buttons for directing us towards the finish line here on a Thursday, on a Friday edition of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. Rob will have the big hour brought to you by Steve Anderson and his team at Hawkeye Title and Settlement, as the guy that they called SAP will be joining us. Anthony Clements, now playing his professional basketball in France. We'll get him. We haven't chatted with him in a while. How's he doing?
He's doing well. He responded to me right away. And the interesting thing about this interview will be, while it's 5 o'clock here, it'll be midnight in France. So hopefully he's drinking coffee. Yeah, he said he's a night person.
There you go.
Are you a night owl?
I used to be. Not so much anymore.
Same with me.
What's that?
That's the same with me. I'm usually in bed by 11 and up at 6 or 7.
Yeah, I can't do that, especially not during the week. During the weekend, different, yeah. But not during the week. But we're going to get you ready for Iowa and Illinois with hopefully Jeremy Werner will be joining us tomorrow. Covers Illinois for 24/7, I believe now. So we'll chat with him and get the lay of the land of Brad Underwood's team heading into a big matchup, and we're going to find out here shortly whether or not
that will mean anything.
That game is going to mean anything for Illinois.
It'll definitely mean something.
Yeah, they can wrap up that double bye, that fourth seed in the Big Ten tournament with a win against Ohio State. That game will get underway here shortly, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's 7 o'clock tonight.
7 o'clock. It's all right. So 7 o'clock tonight. Nebraska and Michigan underway. Michigan has an early 23-18 lead over
John Beilein in the house. We saw on Twitter.
John Beilein in the house.
Senior night.
For senior night, and it'll be interesting to see
Xavier Simpson and his alias. What's his alias?
Yeah, what was his alias again?
Joe Johnson.
I
sent you the video.
I know.
Did you see
I did see it.
Hilarious.
That was funny. But as I said, if you missed anything, KGYMradio.com Buttons is going to upload the podcast for today's show here momentarily. We will talk to you tomorrow.
I'm Joe Coy, stand-up comedian, and I'm here to toast my mother. Sam Adams is the best beer for this toast. It's grassroots, it's family. What I take from that is the same thing.